Right, this is going to be another episode of Counterpoints. Obviously, we've had the RMRs have all been going on around the world in the different regions. We've had some, normally on the RMRs, right, the topics most shows you'll notice are going to focus on is things like the format, because obviously people are complaining about that, things like how many slots should each region get and all these sorts of things. But classic topics that have been revisited many times. I thought what we do for this one is, obviously we've had some giant names not make it there. I mean, the three big ones are obviously Team Liquid in the Americas and then Astralis and Falcons, depending on which ones of the RMRs we're talking about. These are giant names, like, because this is where people get lost. When people say things like, Dupree didn't make the major, or like the Fnatic, or isn't there like NIP? Where's all the Swedes? Like, that's like a massive scale one. These teams right now are supposed to be there, guys. It's more, the bigger reason why these teams are ones I think we should talk about now is because these are all three, you'll notice as well, on some level, Maniac. Like, maybe it's a stretch to say Falcons is a super team, but these are teams that have gone, like, they've basically, they're shooting for the stars, right? They're shooting for, to win the major with these lineups. They're not just trying to, like, be at tournaments. So for them to not even be at the World Championship, if people didn't watch the recent episode which we had on the Four Horsemen on the LFN network here, we had one with Tommy Lurpis recently where we talked about esports winter, and he mentioned a lot of things that he wrote in an article about how the sticker money economy works. And basically, I can tell you right now, Maui Snake nailed it in a tweet, mate. Right now, the most important thing to do in Counter-Strike is just qualify to the major. Because if you qualify to the major, I mean, it's because the Blast Paris one, by the way, guys, had the most like sales of all time. But that was supposedly like, you got something if you were in the big capsule, like 4 million each team or something insane. So essentially, like, the joke is winning the major only gets you 500K, guys. So like, at this point in time, for real, the number one goal actually is just qualify to the major. So I'm sorry, even though these are teams that the joke is, one of these teams might end up fucking around and winning the China major later this year. It doesn't matter. Right now, they're all in deep trouble just because they haven't qualified to this major. So let's just start there, Maniac. What do you think about that, by the way? Because in your era, I just did that Reflections with you recently. As we mentioned in that, back then, if you were just a top 12 team, it was pretty much guaranteed, even if it was online qualifier, even if it was a LAN qualifier, it was, everyone knew you'd all make it there. Like, all the top teams, it was fairly obvious who, and you'd only get the odd surprise team. So what do you think? Because I feel like the landscape is radically different now. I mean, you see it in the EU one, especially, dude. Dude, like, best teams in the world look at this scared in some of these RMRs. Like, you see sometimes G2 and FaZe looking like, bloody hell, are we even getting there? That would be unthinkable back in your day.
No, I agree with you. The landscape has completely changed when it comes to majors. And I think most of it is connected to the incredible financial consequences of making it or not making it through, right? This is something that is completely, I want to say, out of control, not in a bad way, but the magnitude that it's reached now compared to the first time when we had the stickers, for example. Like, I can just put it out there. I'm not shy about it. The first time I personally made money off of stickers, when they introduced the signature, the individual signatures, I think the first payment I got was like $18,000. Like, that was the first time,
okay.
Like, the first time I had an actual signature, right? I can't even remember what major it was. But so now, obviously, we're talking about completely different amounts. And beyond just, obviously, players making life-changing money, and in that topic, I obviously put in the likes of Bad News Eagles once upon a time that were qualifying, or some smaller teams that would qualify. And then for them, it would actually mean a possible life-changing occurrence. I think for other teams and for other organizations as well, it is the difference between making your budget work or not making it work. So financially speaking, these are worlds that we can't even begin to compare. 2014 to 2024 is a completely different road. And I also think that because of that, majors or RMR specifically have become almost make or break moments for teams. Like, missing the major was always calls for rethinking your lineups. Okay, now we are not going to go to the major. Maybe we have a little bit of time to change the roster. Maybe we should change things around. But now I feel like this has become even more extreme. Like, some of the teams that we're obviously going to discuss today either have already made drastic changes,
yes,
or could consider make drastic changes, because that hit is so hard. It hits you so deep in the gut, not making it to the major. And then the next one is relatively far away. You know, Shanghai 2024, that's literally the winter of this year. I feel like it's a make or break that has reached like a new height. I mean, it was always important for us, but nothing close to what's happening now.
Yeah, I mean, the point you're hitting there as well is also, I think, where the world has changed. Because actually, I think Maui's nailed it, and this is the most important thing right now, is get to these majors. The reason why it's wild is, all three of those lineups we're talking about, dude, under normal circumstances, nobody should be considering roster moves. Like, these lineups haven't even played, like, think about it, all they've done is play Blast, kind of eats it if they're qualified, and then the RMR, like, the joke is under normal circumstances, with how the old meta of watching teams goes, we're supposed to sort of go like, well, I'll wait for couple more lands, then I'll make a judgment, you know. But as you say, people want, I mean, Astralis has already done the changes, but people want all these move. They want at least like one roster move, if not some of them want the whole team torn apart. Even though, if you think about it, like the Falcons one, we'll go through them all separately, but the Falcons one, guys, they were just top four at kind of eight here. Like, look, I'm with them. Yeah, I'd change Boros too, but that one's a slam dunk move for anyone. Like, for that one, I don't panic on that one. Like, we can get to each one individually again. The Liquid one, their problem is a bigger one than everyone, which is the Liquid one goes like this. They didn't qualify for anything. Their problem is they fucked up Blast and they fucked up the online qualifiers like Chengdu. Kind of, essentially, their issue is they could never even get into. So their issue is like that one doesn't count for now because they're also going to be missing events going forwards. Like, they're sort of sat on their ass for a while. And then the one when it comes to Astralis, I mean, they've already made the moves is the joke. We don't have to speculate on that one. Like, they've made, I think, drastic moves. I don't even think the upside's that great. So why don't we go one by one? Let's start with the, which you want to pick? Which one?
So, no, but the way I like to look at it is that not all these teams had similar expectations. And then at that game, I think Astralis was or had way more pressure to immediately perform than the rest of these like mix and match roster that we put together and for whom we would probably arguably give time because, oh, it's an international show. It's going to need a little bit of while to find out their philosophy and all. Astralis had made changes. They've had the runway. Like, Astralis had the runway to get to the major and to perform much better than what they had. So I feel like in this very specific case, compared to Falcons, and I think the Liquid one, I think, is a deeper topic to discuss, but compared to the Falcons one, I feel like for Astralis, we really witnessed limitations that would go beyond just that RMR. And now if you, like, back-to-back-to-back, Katowice, then the RMR, the fate of the major, unfortunately, I think even though removing Blamef might seem like, wow, what a drastic change it is, it probably left them with the same feeling that it left us watching them play, which is, holy shit, something is wrong. Something is profoundly wrong with how this team is currently functioning. And it goes beyond just, oh, you know, let's give them a little bit of time. Maybe they need to figure out the roles. Maybe they need to deepen the map pool just a little bit. No, it felt like the issues were much deeper than that. I don't know how you felt watching them, but it was way beyond just, oh, we need to work on our Inferno and we're going to be fine. Like, there were issues that were across maps. There were issues of rhythm of play. There were issues of pressure, of people missing shots, many, many shots, individual performing way below what they're supposed to do. So when you pile up all of these issues, then time isn't going to bail you out. Like, the time that you have played together isn't going to bail you out for all of these issues. Some of them could have arguably been explained by time. Sure, maybe a little bit of a weaker T side here and there because you didn't really have time to work on some strategies. Arguably, when you get pushed into a best of three on map number three, I can get behind that. Maybe if I was to be a bit lenient about it. But some of the issues that we've seen are just like deeply rooted in something that is wrong, either with the way the team was led, the way the pressure was set onto these players, and the way the players were delivering in the conditions that they were put in. And I think that's the reason why we see drastic changes, because I do consider Blaine have been removed relatively drastic. I think that's why the response is so hard.
Yeah, let's do the Astralis one first then. The problem is, I actually do think this is a team where something needed to change. But I also think if we're going to, in the same way as we're looking at the RMR angle and the sticker money, the problem I have with it is, the reason these moves are so silly though, Maniac, is you don't commit the kind of money they committed unless you know this is the lineup you're going to stick with. Because think about this, guys. They've done both ends of this equation in a fucked up way. So on the one hand, you've already heard the stories that like Blamef and Device apparently have like very high salaries. So we know that you're spending for your current talent, your current top 20 players, and then you've signed two top 20 players at a massive premium. Remember what Richard Lewis said in his reporting, that essentially, because of all the shenanigans with Heroic, he says essentially, like, Astralis got charged the dickhead tax, where it's like, look, we'd let these players go anyway, but fuck it, if you're going to fuck with us, it costs you more, you have to pay, you know, maybe hundreds of thousands extra. So if you've shelled out all that money, guys, in salary paid now and in signings, you can't then, even though they have, after like 1.5 events, be like, yeah, kick the lineup. Like, that doesn't work. Like, if you do that, you look like you're a clown in the GMing anyway. Because what someone could obviously say, it's a legit question, is, but you gambled that it was going to work. You don't have any, you've made it sound like you've done a very minor addition. Like, I'm going to try this guy from the academy. Oh, it didn't work out. Remove him. No. You've signed a giant blockbuster move. These were the star players for Verorc. So my problem is, when you look at the fix doesn't address that many of the issues to me, because the issue I have goes like this, Maniac. At the moment, none of the fixes are a direct on-paper upgrade. As in, here's the problems I saw that team having. Because first of all, you know what? I'll tell you another one of my angles I've come up with from the last few years, but I think it just works, mate. Because these Blast Spring groups and Fall group, because these Blast groups are always after the player breaks, these results are just too wonky, guys. Because we all saw this team beat Vitality and then played Vitality a second time, like close in that like Blast group, which, and they beat Falcons and smashed them. Like, that made it look like, holy fuck, hey, this is what everyone hoped. That those results, you can just delete those. Those were the outlier. They never did that ever again. And even then, by the way, they weren't consistent in how they did that either. That wasn't like you could see a whole team shaped and people in their roles. People just had a couple of games with the joke is even Stoutenfrag one of those series boys, and he doesn't do that now. So that was like they just took turns and had the odd game. They never ever did deliver on the potential. So the potential should go like this, Maniac. First of all, IGLing should be decent, because I'm supposed to believe at the time that BlameF wants to do it, and he's done it in the past, and he was decent. I would never say they were good, but he was decent. And the notion of this team was going, he doesn't have to be Glaive, because if the players all frag like you dream of, then he's in more of the Carrigan vein, isn't he? He's more letting the boys play and they're doing a few reads here and there or finding something weird in a demo. Well, first of all, that wasn't there. Like, this team had no T-sides, guys. And in fact, that's where everyone kept complaining about the roles, because you could see on T-side, they just didn't have any of the pieces you needed. Like, in fact, the joke is, even by the end, pieces like Device, a player you would have guaranteed, well, luckily because of the AWP, he'll be able to get his. He couldn't get his by the end, guys. Even he degraded his level and wasn't the super consistent player. And so, sadly, they didn't have any of the things that they should have had in this team, which was it should have been an all-star team where they all frag out so hard that the joke is it's more like the G2 or Huxley. We're actually trying to figure out, like, does BlameF call these games? Is it just Device and fucking, you know, Yabby go kill? Like, it should have been that conversation, but we've never got to that, because aside from Blast, they've just failed right out the gate over and over and over again. And so, sadly to me, the issue is when I look at the moves they've done, so you take BlameF not just off IGL. This is why it's so weird to me, mate. You take him out the team completely. Well, that's just weird, because that's actually the player, along with Device, that historically is giving me my most guaranteed production. I know even when he's not IGL, I can get a certain amount of frags and in certain situations from him. And then when you change him, you not only take him off IGL, so you could say, if I'm going to complain earlier, he's not that good in IGL. Yes, but if I say he's not that good in IGL, my assumption is you're going to bring in a good IGL, not just make Device the IGL. I mean, the point there is, even if you want to be as generous as possible, I can't even conceive of if he'll be good at the role or not. I mean, I've often said this about Cadian and Jame. I actually think what impresses me in the end when their teams are successful is that they can still be pretty good AWPers and IGL. I think that's incredible. I think that's so weird to have as a style. And then lastly, I'll just say this. You've not only taken BlameF off, then made the other IGL even more so, someone we don't know if they'll be good. And obviously it could degrade Device's game even further. And then finally, who did we bring in? We brought in the Brogout. Now, I could believe the bro guy is here to facilitate other people and to help the Stounds of the world. Yeah, I get that. But the problem is, we've just potentially kneecapped two of our most consistent firepower sources. So at the end of it all, do we even have an IGL? Do we even have a functional? Do the roles now even work, is my question. Because I actually feel like the saddest thing is, of all the teams, the difference is they might yet keep the lineups in Falcons and Liquid and make it work. They don't have the choice now in Astralis. They've done this weird angle where they're doing all these things. And the worst thing to me, I'll say finally, is this, Maniac. You're doing it all at once. I'd like these moves one at a time, mate. You know what I mean? Take blame off IGL, see how that works. Megan the bro guy, see how that works with a real IGL. You know, doing it all at once, I feel like makes it so you're going to even have a hard time knowing what's working and what isn't. Like, is it Device not open anymore? Is Device not good enough IGL? Is the bro guy even fitting his role? Should we have kept blame? You're going to be trying to figure all this out simultaneously. And by the way, with all the failures they've had as well, I'll tell you what, there's no chance coming right out the gate right now to fail again. In the first line, you're going to have to be good. Wait there, one second. I think you're lagged. Oh, there you go. You're back here. Go on.
No. I'm right there with you. Had I been in the full power, full control, I wouldn't have gone the way about it that they did. I agree that I think there's going to be so many different issues to be addressed and so many fixes to be made at the same time. It's one of these scenarios where you're going to lose your head and you're going to lose track of whatever it is that you need to work on progressively, like step by step. I just wanted to bounce back on the BlameF topic. I also believe that, like, a lot of people are putting out there the idea that Stone and Bamif cannot play together on the same team because of role clash. I actually disagree with that. Not that they could both have their best case scenario, but I do think that there is a world in which you can have two rifles with the most movement-based positions and resource-based positions. I think CT side, very typically on any map, offers two positions with like a whole lot of rotations.
Yes.
Of course, on top of that, you put an AWP in there and then you're going to be fine. So I personally think that my take is, I think Yabi in his position didn't really have the shoulders to, because I know it was very rough for him. Like, you watch the games that Yabi's had. Yeah, of course, he's played all of the shit positions with barely any kind of help, any kind of setup, any kind of pop flash or anything. He was left on his own. So I know that. But you have to have a minimum of productivity if you're going to be put in that position. We knew it was going to be part of the deal. So if you want to bring in Bro, who definitely has an ability to fill, I think he was doing that with Monty pretty well. He was playing sometimes pretty decent positions, sometimes very shadowy positions. That's fine. The way I see it, you just take out Yabi. You bring in Bro. You have a higher floor for the positions that are be definitely ungrateful. And then you still have Blamef as a rifle. The problem is the IGL topic. And this is where you have to sort of make a choice, right? So Device as an IGL, how am I supposed to know what he can do? How are we supposed to know what he can do? Like, the fact that he's got an ID for the game, yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure he has a very good mind for the game. He's been at a very top level for years and years and years and years. But not only was his individual performance not exactly the best towards the end of this stint, and now he's going to have to put in the work as a leader. Like, how is he going to deal with whatever tax this is going to get on his gameplay as well? Because we can definitely argue, hypothesize, that it's going to be harder for him individually. Now he's going to be the leader as well. When he gets to be the leader of that, he needs to figure out all of the issues that we just mentioned about Astralis. Of course, not alone. He's got a coaching staff. He's got people with him. But when shit's on fire on the server and you're playing an official, he's going to be the one whose voice is going to have to come through and figure out what the hell is going on. So I personally don't really vibe with the changes they've made. I think it might have just displaced problems rather than actually fixed any. And I don't know how they're going to deal with like the obvious long runway that they're going to have just to improve and just to be better at it. That is, I don't know. I really struggle seeing it.
Also, I'll just throw this in there. The other reason I hate doing all these moves at once is, so you've just hired Rogger to be the coach. Give him a go with the fucking lineup. How about let him have a tournament, then let him see what he would change? Like, in this scenario, like, you've almost given him the poison chalice. He's also now coming into a worse lineup potentially on paper. Now he has to make it work. Because another thing I'll say is this. I want to touch on the Device thing you were going to mention. I'll definitely do a video on this topic. But I'll just briefly make it the point like this. The reason why you and I, specifically Maniac, intently know this is not as simple as, well, he's a great player and he's smart and he likes to think about the game, so make him the IGL. Guys, you do realize if that works for you, then you shouldn't be agreeing with us that NBK shouldn't be the IGL, because that was NBK's selling point the whole time. He was a mega veteran player who'd played with the greatest IGLs ever, was a cerebral player and a secondary caller, and he did like to study the game. So by your logic of why you want Device to be IGL, NBK should be IGL. Like, that's even the reason why it was so hard for his own teammates to battle him. Because if by the logic of sort of like give him the benefit of the doubt, he had all the boxes checked. It's just the problem is it didn't work. And quite frankly, I always thought when he did it, he also tanked his own game and he's someone who could contribute. Well, Device, it's even more so, mate. Like, first of all, when people say all these things like, oh, but he's a really smart player, that's irrelevant. There's plenty of very, very smart players that it doesn't. And also, there's a different type of intelligence, guys. Like, for example, the best example I'll give is this. If you want to see like a player who wins clutches in a very intelligent way, Shox is your man. But I don't think in terms of like as an IGL, he ever made sense as an IGL. So it's a different type of smarts, you see. That's like an intuitive smarts of a one-on-one player. And I didn't say a star player when he's in certain, that's different to controlling a team and sending people out and reconnaissance and the conditioning of the opponent and thinking about things your coach told you in a timeout. That's a different skill set. So even though Device is smart, I don't know that it's in this way. Even though Device is someone who likes to study the game for the other AWPers. Yes, but that's a very different type of a battle you're studying there. You're studying timings and duels. When you're watching a demo as a coach or an IGL, you're studying like the defense and what our offense is doing and what our things. This is another skill set again. That's not something he's been doing when he's with Glaive and with Carrigan and all the other players over the years. And then lastly, I'll just throw this out there. Unlike an example like even an NBK, he's not just giving up a role. He's given up arguably one of the hardest star roles in the game. consistent primary AWPer. Like, that means it's almost certainly going to tank some of that for himself, because you can't just be watching the crosshair and thinking about, you're also thinking about the rest of the map. I'd even throw this out there, guys. I have a massive concern that he's just going to AWP way less now, because I would imagine so many more times on T side, you can't really be in the position an AWPer's going to be with. You're going to have to be with the pack with an AK. You're going to have to do that to make it work. So you can see. And then lastly, I'll just throw this out there. I'm amazed no one else has come with this angle, mate. Dude, Device to this day still has the same tell when he is tilted as he did when Blastralis was there in 2019. He literally punches monitors. You're picking the player that punches monitors when he's angry, and you're making him the fucking in-game leader. If you don't get the joke, an in-game leader would have a reason to punch a monitor, even in games he wins often. Like, that's temperament, guys. Like, I actually also feel like temperament-wise, I think Device is an amazing star in terms of temperament. Like, he can keep it bottled in, and he's not too much of a diva. But I do think he has the star mentality of, like, the point there is, if you're just the sick AWPer, you can punch the screen if you're mad. In a way, I even vibe with it. Oh, fuck, he's so into it. If you're the coach or the IGL and you do that, now I'm a bit worried, because the bro guy's watching you to learn from you. These other players who are a bit quieter are trying to look to you as like a leader. And in this scenario, that's not leader, that's raging out, isn't it? So the difference is, for a star, that's cool. We can accept it. For an IGL, I don't think you can do that. So I'm a bit worried about this one, Maniac. Like, look, I'd love to believe it's possible. Anyone who actually, I do think, like I say, if you're smart, if you study, if you want to take the run, these are all great things, but I think it's a very specialized role. And I don't think that many people make it through the sort of threshold, in my opinion. We all want to believe everyone can do it, but that's actually why, I'll even give him props here, that's why actually when Snacks did transform from some guy who made all brilliant individual players into like a fairly competent IGL, I'm impressed by that. I would have again been a naysayer, but in this case for Device, I'd love it to work, but I have kind of a bad vibe about this. Like, I've got to tell you straight up, I get the vibe this doesn't even last 6 months, mate. I think in three months or somewhere, someone else is coming in, or someone else is taking the role on and he's back to AWP. I think that's what happens, mate.
Actually your concerns, I think there's two angles to it. The first one is, and as you pointed out, it is extremely difficult for an AWPer to remain efficient while you have to think about what everything is happening in the round. And you have to make the mid-round calls, and you have to micromanage a couple of situations. And at the same time, you have to be the AWPer. Like, extremely complicated to do that. So there's two ways to go about it. One is, obviously, if his level tanks a little bit, how is he going to deal with that? Like you mentioned, you know, fusions of emotions here and there, monitor punching, memes and whatever the hell. Okay, so how is he going to deal with his level tanking if his level does tank, which I think is a very probable scenario that we're looking at here. That's one angle. The only angle, the only way that I can think about this working is if Astralis make now the conscious decision to tailor their playstyle to him. And I feel like this is the only time in the history of Counter-Strike where AWPers and leaders have actually had some kind of success, is when the playstyle is literally made for you. Any kind of pre-sequence been put together. I mean, Jaime is obviously the prime example, but Fallen had some years as well where he was extremely strong and he was the main piece of whatever puzzle was going on. Whenever Kadian had success in Heroic, he was obviously very much at the very center of some of these moves. So if Astralis is going to help Device have protocols that are made for him to be activated and be strong within the game, okay, that I can imagine. Now, you are going to tell me how everybody else is going to deal with that, because that also means a truck ton of resources being devoted to your AWPers, timings, money, resources, whatever it is. You're going to have to tell me how everybody else handles it. But I feel like it's a rock and a hard place. You either are going to have to retail your entire playstyle to suit Device in order for him to not have a massive drop, or you're going to have to deal with arguably one of the strongest player ever in Counter-Strike having a massive drop. Like, he was supposed to be, he and Blamef, even in the harshest of times of Astralis, were always players we could go to and say, you know what, Blamef and Device, they're going to produce, man, they're out there 115, 120 rating every single time, online all the time. I can bet my whole house on them, they're going to do fine. That assumption now doesn't work anymore. That assumption is actually a maybe. We don't know how Device is going to play, and we don't know how he's going to be handling it when he is not playing well. And are you telling me he's going to have to remain calm individually, plus he's going to have to keep calm and have lucidity on the calls and what's happening in the game? And I think this is probably one of the areas that intelligent players underestimate the most, is your ability to remain level-headed when you are having a shit game and you are now the IGL and you cannot rely on your guy to the left or your guy to the right, aka your captain, to dig you out of this mess because he knows something that you haven't seen. Because it's very famous that just psychologically, when you're having a hard time, it's very complicated. You're basically standing too close to the elephant and you cannot really see the game. Now, Device is going to have to get himself familiarized with that. having a harsh, tough game to go through, and at the same time, keeping a cool head, figuring out solutions, having a good level of communication as well, keeping the morale pretty high for the troops. Like, these are all qualities that have nothing to do with being smart in the game, because Device is smart in the game. It was always one of the smartest AWPer you could study, positioning, angle management, timing. It was always up there. But that has, for me, very little to do with being a captain and handling the ship whenever things go to hell. That's another topic, and he's going to have to prove a whole lot in that.
Also, there's one last thing I forgot to mention, which also no one's brought up. This is why I'll do my own video and summarize all this shit. There's one last detail that I think makes it mega inappropriate, which is, you know what everyone's forgetting, Maniac? They're forgetting a very famous thing about Device from the last 5 or so years. He has that fucking condition where he gets like I don't know if it's like what something to do with his intestines or his bowels, if people know, where he has like essentially like pain that he sometimes experiences, and it's supposedly stress-related. Bro, you're picking to be the IGL. Like I said before, the joke is like, even an IGL that wins a game and all his star players are high-fiving, yeah, great job. Half the time, you're bloody a nervous wreck because like, you know how close it was to going wrong. You walk in the tightrope, as it were. You make a call that, phew, that just worked. I didn't even bloody know if that was, you know what I mean? Your star player wins a 1v1 when he should lose the round and suddenly you win the game 13-11. Like I say, all your stars stand up and they all go, great game, guys. We'll get him next time. As an IGL, you're like, fucking hell, we shouldn't even have won that one. Are we going to get this next? What are we doing on map too? Like, it's basically like a stress role, same with being a coach. So like, all I'm gonna say is Device better not have that issue, because that issue alone quite literally could ruin his fucking life, mate. Like, that sounds really horrible, because like I say, that's why I do think it's one of the positions that requires the most mental strength is IGL, because you're gonna have to suffer a lot. You have to go through a lot of fucking bullshit.
Yep, I'm right there with you. One of the many reasons why I don't really feel this change, but I guess we'll have to wait. And the only upside for them is that they have a little bit of time now to just work on the play side. They're not going to have to play Counter-Strike for a few weeks. So I don't know. I guess we're going to see them in Pro League. I guess we're going to have to see what kind of phase they show.
Right, here's the thing. Let's do the other two. Let's talk about Falcons then. Because here's the fun thing, Maniac. It turns out there was even that straight fire clip that we were able to use from this show, if you saw. Whereas a joke, I said to you, and then Simple joins as the fifth player, they win the major. Which, look, obviously they're not playing the major with Simple, guys. They're not in the major. And then secondly, he's already playing this Blast Showdown online. But first of all, it was funny because obviously it's a mad out of nowhere shout. And then secondly, it's also made it mad spicy. Like, I'll tell you what, I'll tell you what, mate, if someone asked me PR wise, right, Maniac, oh, fuck, you know that big team we've made where we signed the ENDS core? Yeah, we fucked it. We didn't make the major. Shit. What's like the one biggest thing we could do, like very temporarily, that would like turn around like people being hyped about the team? Like, I don't know, shit. I mean, at that point, you probably have to get like the best player of all time. We've got Simple. It's like, all right then, because mate, the second they announced that, everyone was sort of like, ooh, okay, all right. Oh, now, you know, it's like that fucking Django Unchained, isn't it? You had my attention, but now you have my curiosity, or the other way around, whatever it was. Like, that's the first thing, because I have to say, I already alluded to, because of the Katowice run, I already didn't overreact personally to the Falcons losing at the RMR. It was sad, but the differences of these three teams, Liquid, Astralis and Falcons. Falcons actually has had like some coherence. I have seen them get better as the matches have gone on since they've had the team. And when I looked at it, theirs with Boros was just an obvious one. I think everyone, the joke is everyone except maybe Boros knew that his time was limited here and it probably wouldn't work out. And it was the most obvious player to replace. So look, even though the Simple one we could talk about a bit, we're assuming it's a temporary move for now. But I do feel like the other reason I'm interested in this team is whoever they do actually get in that fifth spot, if it's not Simple, it actually is just another good player. I do think there's a future to this team, mate. Like, I look at the squad and I kind of do feel the pieces work, and I think it has somewhere to go. I'm not worried about this squad, essentially. I don't think they need more changes. Just either figure out who you replace Simple with or whatever, but I think there's a future to this team, in my opinion. What are your thoughts on Falcons?
So it's a bit of a nuanced opinion. On one hand, I do agree with you. I'm not worried about the future of Falcons. Like, I know they have a pretty solid like basis already. And whenever they've figured out the fifth player, would it be Simple on the rifle? And that's an entire topic on its own, by the way. Also what we discussed then at the time, that could be coming back as a rifle, could be the move. It's what's happening now. But I will say, I think that Boros was dealt cards that would, from the very beginning, inevitably end up in him being
Oh, of course.
And so the reason I say that is, not just because of some of the positions that he's playing, because like some of our colleagues made remarks about like where he's playing, for but Jacob Pim said, you know, you should never have a player like that playing ramp. I can agree to an extent, but you know, Robs has been playing rampant. He's playing amazingly. So it's not like it's just an indictment immediately that you're going to get removed. We are in an age now where a strong anchor actually has become one of the most central pieces of any lineup that's winning.
Sure.
So I personally think that he could have done better than that. But what I felt was that from the very beginning, any of his mistake would be immediately scrutinized.
Yes.
And from the community and from within as well. And that can be very pernicious. In the sense of, if you are playing within this team and you already have in the back of your mind, like, oh my God, like, I don't really know about this guy. Like, if this isn't perfect, we're going to remove him immediately and we're going to try to make another player come in. This is the vibe that I had. And I'm just going to put a PSA on that. Maybe I'm just talking out of my ass. I'm not within the team. I haven't had information from within the team. This is all purely feelings based on watching this team behave and how they were playing together. I had the sense that people were already ready to basically trial him, judge him guilty, send him out of the team whenever any kind of mistakes happen. Because I feel like, sure, his performance wasn't phenomenal, but I have watched them play, I have watched them lose, and I cannot tell you in honesty and full sense of myself that he was the reason why. I can't tell you that. I cannot tell you he is the reason why they have lost at the RMR. Sure, were there mistakes? Absolutely. Were there scenarios where he either reacted too fast or reacted too slow, wasn't synchronized with the rest of the team? Yes, 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 that happened, absolutely. But I think it is an incredible oversimplification to stand here and say, well, you know what, actually, it was just about Boros.
So,
it's okay, now we're going to remove him, we're going to bring someone else. Simple for that matter. And oh my God, we're right back at the very top. I think it's a bit of a simplification. And there are other players that at the time haven't exactly delivered. I think personally, Majisk, for all of the credit that I want to give him, and I've always given him, I had higher expectations from the very get-go. I think we painted him as a plug and play that will immediately raise the level of the team. He's going to deliver on any kind of scenarios. I don't necessarily think that was the case. Not that he was mediocre, but he was not at the level that I hoped for. So I do think there's a case of people are being a little bit reductive with why Falcons didn't work out. Because you also have to remember, I know the format of the RMR is something that we can discuss at large with the seedings and the seedings not being updated and how stupid that is. And I'm aware of that. You still lost the best of three to Amcal in overtime on the third map where you were in the lead. Like, where do we go with the format on that? Like, how are we fighting that?
Sure.
You can argue you should have other chances to bounce back. Sure, but at the end of the day, you lost the best of three to Amcal.
Yes.
It's, how can
I mean, here's the way you say it, Maniac. The way I would phrase it is this. If someone said to Falcons before the RMR begins, right, we'll teleport you forwards in time, you just have to beat Amcal. They'd take that immediately. They'd say, yeah, of course, load him up, let's play the game. So, yeah, you're right, I agree. That life you have no excuse for. It's the best of three lost on one LAN. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So for the rest, I don't really worry. It hasn't changed my opinion on Snappy, Sampaius, Madden, the core. It hasn't changed my opinion on Majisk and what he can do. But I do wonder if they had the right mindset, both mentally and positionally with Boros. But now that problem sort of solved itself. So you know you got to bring someone else in. I'm still going to be extremely hyped to see Falcons play. Even more so now that Simple is in, because there's so many different interesting storylines about his return to the game and like the form he's going to have and the mindset he's going to be in. I mean, there's a million reasons to be excited about them. But I do rate their failure at the RMR, because I still think it's a failure.
Sure, of course.
More harshly than I feel the general vibe is. Like, general vibe is just, you know what? It was just about time to kick Boros. That's fine. We've moved on to a logical conclusion. And here comes...
You think they should have qualified anyway, though?
I think so. Because you talk about Katowice, and I think... In Katowice, they had far from a perfect Counter-Strike.
Sure.
But they showed so much tenacity and resilience, like coming back into games and having incredible like clutch moments where they win rounds that are impossible to win. Like this, I value that so highly for a team. Like, it's what players are made of. And the RMR is supposed to be the perfect stage to showcase that. Everybody's talking about how pressure this is, and this is the most intense moment of the calendar to make it or break it to the major. I wanted to see what I saw in Katowice. I wanted to see a Falcons that is a little bit brawly, not perfect, mistakes here and there. Sure, we know you're not going to be ready for your full game, but I don't know. They were lacking that little bit of oomph, and I don't really think that just saying it was Boros is accurate. I think there was more to it, but it doesn't mean I'm not excited about the team and I'm giving up on them. Absolutely not. I'm still very excited about the team.
By the way, here's how I'm going to treat the simple thing, Maniac. I am, in theory, I'm just going to treat it on face value. He's joining as a stand-in to just play at the showdown, and then he is a Na'Vi player, and he may choose to play for Na'Vi, who knows? But part of me, low-key, does hope this is also like a power move by Simple, and here's why. Because since he is only coming on loan for this one tournament, surely all the cards are in his hand if he plays really well. Because if he played really well, then he would have the choice. Does he want to go back to Na'Vi and be a rifle and they make this dope team like we talked about, where Wimful could be the AWPer? And by the way, wouldn't that immediately make them a potential contender? It'd be pretty exciting in itself, right? Or maybe there's a world where he likes it in Falcons and he does say, if you can arrange this signing, then I will be in your chip, which by the way, would be fucking insane. And then I'll lastly put this one other detail in. Technically, this gives us a chance to test out what he said in my interview with him. So if you remember, the headline of the second part of the interview with Simple was I asked him, could Nico be considered the GOAT of CSGO? And he didn't really understand what I meant. He was like, well, no, it can't. CSGO's over. And I was like, no, what I mean is, because obviously everyone says the AWP was overpowered and all the top players like you and Ziwu and Device were all AWPers. So what I meant was, you know, if we took the AWP out and the only rifle existed, wouldn't Nico be the GOAT? And Simple, because he's simple and we all love him, said no, because I'd have still been better than him with a rifle. Well, remember, Nico was supposed to be the fifth player in this team, and now you're here, Simple. So just go ahead and use that rifle, Hobie, and show me better than Prime Nico. If you can do it, it's right there. Now, look, to be fair, he's obviously coming back after a while off, but I'm with you, Maniac. Fuck any... This is one time where I don't want to hear context. I don't want to hear reasons and sane explanations as to why he shouldn't be that great and it should just be okay. And they'll probably have like some touch and go games. I want to believe that this is like 2018, I don't know, April 2018 Simple walking in fully primed and he's just going to go mental, but with a rifle and dominate completely. I want to believe so badly.
That would actually, it would actually just change the complexion of this team.
It'd be so sexy, wouldn't it? Yeah.
If he actually come in as a very, very strong rifle, like he would, Algo, you also have to imagine, like he would have so many different options for his career if he actually proved, on paper and not on paper, just on the server, that he was a very strong, very efficient rifle and that put like a very potent secondary sniper, of course. Poof, this would actually be sick. I wouldn't mind if that happened. I think Counter-Strike is more exciting when Simple is there and when Simple plays good CS in any case. But like, there's a little like vicious part of me that's thinking, what if he's struggling? Like, what's going to happen?
Oh, okay.
What's going to happen? Like, how? What? Because you mentioned like how his position can be so strengthened. If he comes in Falcons, he had a short stint. He kills everybody on the server. He bombs out 30 kills plus whatever. What if he is just average, pedestrian? What if he's just a name in a list and he's got...
Oh, mate, imagine a world, because this will happen, imagine a world where he doesn't do well on a few maps and those HL TV threads, Simple fans come here, Simple is washed, Donkey's the best now.
Very fast.
Because what you have to ask yourself, actually, more philosophically is, to be fair, Simple's never had to do that before, mate. Even when he was bad, if you remember, like these last years, the joke like we talked about is him being bad is if he can take off the last third of the year and still be like a top 10 player in the world at the end of the year, guys. Like, his version of being bad, it's like when Donk failed at the RMR, like, he didn't fail. He had a 1.26 rating at the end of the event, guys. It's just that wasn't a 1.7 rating. So how are you, Maniac? We've never actually seen Simple bad. Like, imagine if he actually was bad. That would be pretty wild, right?
Well, it would be, of course. I don't believe Simple will ever be bad with a capital B. I don't think that's going to happen. But what I do think is that we might underestimate the time he would need to reach the level where can call him Simple again, right?
Sure.
And I'm just going to put a bow on it as well. I think the community will very likely overreact to Simple playing average. Because I think if you're being truly objective...
Dude, to be fair, didn't everyone go mad on Ziwu after like one series? Four maps.
Like Maui had a tweet where he said like, Ziwu's not a top 10 player anymore. And like,
I love it.
Whatever.
That's a hot take and a half right there.
Time took care of itself.
I love it.
All good. But this is what's going to happen to Simple, right? Because like the Nico, the Simple, the Zywos of the world, they have a couple of bad maps and then that's it. But you talk about the HLTV fronts and all. I know that even if he shows up at the showdown and is average or above average, I know that it would only be a matter of time with a bit more playtime on the server for him to once again go to a very high level.
Right.
I'm aware of that. But the community probably isn't.
Sure.
Or a vocal part of the community probably isn't. And how would then Simple deal with the kind of yes. vibe that would come out of this very vocal side of the community? Would say, ha ha, Simple washed, is the same as last year.
Yep.
Not even a top 10 player anymore. That's it. You're done. That's like to that. This is where, as crazy as it sounds, it feels like there are new pages that can be written in the book of Simple, which already is the greatest book that we have in Counter-Strike, modern Counter-Strike. There are still new pages to be written. Like, hey, do you have it like to walk back up the stairs, like to push that boulder once again back up the mountain now that you've arguably struggled a little bit? Oof. But I do think that in Falcons at the showdown is probably a pretty favorable moment to do so. It's not that much pressure. It's online as well.
Yeah, exactly.
You're just here as a stand-in.
Yeah.
I think it's a good moment to do that. It's a good moment to destroy everybody on the server if you still have it in you.
No, I'm with you. I actually think that is a totally plausible angle as well. I also think the other part people aren't realizing is this is where, like, if people don't get it, the reason I say I think Simple can come back and, like, even be the best player again isn't actually about his talent. It's actually about his work ethic, mate. Like, one of the things I've always been impressed with Simple is the guy was a grinder, and I already think he might be the most talented player ever. So that's the thing that I can be assured about. It's the same reason, by the way, why I actually said, if you can ever go back and watch, every time Device took those breaks from Counter-Strike, I always said, I guarantee he comes back. Like, it's another player where I know their work ethic is immaculate. Like, I just know they'll do everything they can. And then, look, beyond that, you have to hope fate and the game and everything works out too. But the idea is they're doing everything they can on their end. So, like, you can somewhat be assured that if they also have talent, it will continue to manifest. Because I'm with you. I don't think there's really a world where he can be bad. But he could definitely walk in, have a few online games of CS2 now, and look a bit sus, or do, like the obvious one would be, maybe even skill-wise, he looks fine, but then maybe he just doesn't have a feel for the game at the moment. Maybe just a weird, like, fucks up a 1v2 or something like that. Like, old Simple would win easily or something silly like that, right? It's easy for these things to go wrong.
You mentioned Nico. Would you say Nico is a top 5 player in the world right now?
No, he's had his struggles, hasn't he? Yeah.
No. He's far from it. And now it's been events on events. Months are passing, and someone that was undoubtedly the best rifle that ever played the game is now just a strong player. He's now just a good player. And who, like, this in itself is enough of a proof of concept that technically this could happen to Simple. This could have happened to Zywoo. A change of game, a game that has some new mechanics. It's always the conversation is always, whenever you change version of a game, in my mind, and I don't know if I'm mentally obtuse about it, but I feel like whoever was mastering the former discipline at the highest sort of has the most adjustments to make to the new version, because you were at the very top of what was done before.
Yes.
You mastered it. That's you. You finished the game. You were the best with all the timings and the mechanics of the game and whatever cross placement you needed, and vertical, horizontal, how you should spray or not, move or not. You were at the highest. And so now you have a new game coming up, and whatever you were doing technically isn't working anymore. So the adjustment that you have to put in technically can be, like, or at least philosophically can be thought at, that's a bigger adjustment, because you have once again to go back to the very top, and then you have going to have to see how you adapt to it. But I do think that for Simple, having a bit more rifle play instead of upper is a very good way to ease back up into it, to keep some movement in the game, to have some of these, like, peeker's advantage and spray and, like, white swing. I think it's a very good way, because he was always super aggressive as a player. So you can use it as a rifle. Use it as a rifle, it's going to be fine. And then whenever you wand up, bring up the secondary sniper, and then it's going to be all good.
The funny thing is, I actually think the main thing that put Astralis in this discussion of these teams under so much pressure was the whole thing of, like, first of all, people like Device just don't miss majors, obviously. And then I know he did with the last lineup too, but he historically was one of those players that had been in the playoffs a bazillion times in a row. And then secondly, it was obviously the Danish major, isn't it? We're having the first ever major in Denmark, and then none of them are going to be there, which, by the way, the joke is that even blurred into Falcons, because then you had the whole thing with fucking Magus Gonzonic too, right? Yeah. But this is the difference. I actually do think the team that is on the biggest hot seat is actually Team Liquid, mate. And the reason why, like I said earlier, is this just compounds their problems. They fucked up Blast, they fucked up the online qualifiers, now they fucked up the RMR. And even though I do think the RMR format is a disgrace for the Americas, at the same time, that's supposed to be a field you're walking through. I know it's not as simple as that, Maniac. I'll never make it reductive. Like, I do think, for example, that sometimes it can be harder, like the famous saying about, you know, the greatest swordsman doesn't fear the second best swordsman. He fears the man who's never held a sword, because they can do essentially things that are counterintuitive or aren't the correct like meta player, but it might surprise you as a result. I do think in the same sense, sometimes if you're playing world-class teams and then you go and play essentially like people who are locals who don't play in the same scene, they're going to play such a different meta of Counter-Strike. You might lose even if it's lower-level Counter-Strike in the same way as someone in an MMA fight who just got into a brawl with some fighter they don't know could get knocked out of nowhere, even if they're a much better overall fighter if they fought a tactical fight or a wrestling fight. Maybe they would dominate, right? So I do think there's some of that. But with that said, to fail now, I do think is insane, because when you look at the squad that they have, the problem is this lineup doesn't have any history, mate. It doesn't have players. Like this is a totally brand new project, and it's trying to be a super team as well. It's trying to go for everything to win the major, be number one. And so they're going to not only have to wait a while to get proper lands in again, which is when you're going to show that you fixed it. But the other issue is right now, I don't think there's easy fixes. Like, look, people will know I'm very biased to Zeus. I do think he's a very brilliant coach. I think especially some of the social things he does in teams means I'll give him a lot more leeway to fix things than I will just like... Like, I think Blade's more of a tactical coach, for example. So I'm more worried with Blade if I see tactically they don't know what they're doing. That's when I get worried. I'm not taking him to be the, like the big brother who fixes someone's attitude. Zeus can do that as well. My main issue in this team, it goes like this. It's just two players at the moment, and it's Yekindar and Scholes. And the reason why is this. Scholes is just so inexperienced. I understood he might struggle anyway. The Yekindar one, people might know I've flamed him because he was shitty to me online. I did not expect this. I actually thought the second you take this guy off IGL, you give him sort of the kind of role he likes, he's going to be right back to his best. Like, in fact, dude, earlier on when we had Peaker's advantage, I was thinking this guy's going to love CS2. Like, think about what some of these players, these aggressive riflers do with those fucking peaks. Like, this guy, you think of prime Yekindar before became IGL, go like a year and a half back, this guy would tear up CS2 right now. He has had some really fucking struggle games, and I'm talking, dude, he's even struggling mechanically. This guy's mechanics are very good, and that's the one area I never had any my concern with this guy was like decision making, ego, hubris to think you could do the IGL role. So there's a concern, because I have an inexperienced player who I sort of need the rest of the guys to carry so he can get through the early period when he's getting his teething problems. He's been thrown in the deep end here. And then in terms of Yekindar, I already needed you to be good, mate, because the problem they have in this team as well, I'll throw in there, is this. You can tell this is not heroic, because mate, Cadian is not going to be a star player in this team if you watch it. Like, he's just an IGL. Like, that part in heroic where he would sort of be like the second or third fragger and he'd court and he'd fucking IGL and make all these sick calls. He's a lot more just an IGL in this team. So the problem they have is, I do still think, like, look, the pieces are really good. You could, there's so many ways I could see this team working. I'd still give them a lot of time, but my main concern is like, I'm just not, like, the Yekindar one's really scary to me. I'm just not getting what I need from this guy. This was supposed to be, and especially in this lineup, this should be where you're going for, like, HLTV top 20 again, mate. You should be on your back on your bullshit, you know?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I have a whole lot to say about the Liquid project, but we can start with the Yekindar talk. I just want to put as a disclaimer, I think I read a tweet from Twist that said Yekindar's had some really rough time personally right now.
Oh, right.
Everybody
fair
send
enough.
Him some love or whatever. So okay. If that is the case, I'm not aware of it, but it is a reality that we might consider for the context of the RMR, right? So that's just a disclaimer. But outside of that, I agree with you that his performance, his output is way below what we had hoped for, expected, and what we should have seen. And the way I look at it is the following. Maybe, just maybe, we underestimated how much the Virtus Pro machine was allowing him to give his best Counter-Strike out there. Because if you think about it, this is prime Yekindar. Entry fragger Yekindar within VP. This is where he took everybody by storm.
Yes.
This is where we started talking about potentially the best entry fragger in the world, like the work he was putting in. Maybe we overestimated how much was down to his own just ability. And we had a tendency to ignore whatever else VP was doing for him. Would it be utility being used? Would it be the timings, the game plans that Jayne was putting together? That, I think, is an opinion, or it's a narrative that sort of has a bit more wind to it right now, that we've seen him struggle as an IGL and we see him struggle as a player again in a different system. Because I will say, if you're willing to be an aggressive player, and if you're willing to put your life on the line time and time again in rounds, the quality of the protocols of your team are going to make or break whether or not you have success. I mean, you can be strong. You can be a strong anti-fragger. But if you execute, if the way you attack and take a zone isn't optimized a little bit, if you don't have the right flashes at the right time, if you're not counting on the right timing of the Molotov when you peek an opponent, if you don't have someone maybe jumping for an AWP or something, you basically are going to be sent to be shredded. It is what's going to happen. Like, if you enter a bomb site and some positions aren't exactly cleared, or you don't have someone that's following you in the right position to sort of crossfire as you enter an area, you're going to be massacred right there and there. So maybe we overestimated what Yekinder could do on his own. Because I don't think it's foolish to say Liquid is far from being ready. Like, they're far. I rewatched the game against Complexity.
Oh, the T sides are janky as fuck, but they got all
exactly.
sorts of
problems.
Exactly.
And I can see they're now in this period of time where they have an idea on how they want to play Counter-Strike, and the execution to that idea is far from being ready. So you end up being with very weird rounds, because you can definitely see the concept behind what is trying to be done, but it's far from being executed correctly, which ends up looking like a clown round. But I can understand what they were trying to do. It's a really rough moment to have as a team, because in paper, it's much easier to just play like contact play, one puff flash, let's go, let's have fun. If you try to play a bit deeper Counter-Strike and you're not ready to do it yet, you're going to break your teeth a couple times. And that's where they're at. But still, did we overrate Yekinder and what he could do individually? And maybe we have to realize he relies a whole lot more on having a game that is actually set with good protocols behind him so that he can be who he needs to be. And if so, then that means we have to maybe put some relativity on the level that we imagine Yekinder to be at. That's one thing.
Put it this way. Let me just quickly say one thing. By the way, after this, you just run for the rest of the time, because obviously we're up against time. What I'll say on the Yekinder one is, the reason why narratively that's a very interesting point, Maniac, is because actually at the time when Yekinder came along was when actually there hadn't been the redemption arc for Jayme. We were all flaming him for being mega baity, weren't we? So at the time, Yekinder was the polar opposite. We saw him as the saver of VP. It was like, right, there's this mega baity team that saves, and this guy's willing to go in first and break the gate. But the problem I think we're realizing now is it wasn't just one guy's good and one's bad. They had like a creative tension that was awesome and seemed to work really well. And the joke is, I've got to say, if you look at what Jayme's done since without Yekinder, I think he actually sort of gets more credit than he did at the time for what they did in that relationship, because he's shown a great form without Yekinder. Whereas I agree with you, without Jayme, he's never been as good. He's had times in TLE he was good, but he's never been as good though.
I agree with you.
And well, give me all the rest of your thoughts then. Come on.
So no, the other angle I wanted to put on is that from the very beginning, Liquid have been very adamant about, hey, we are putting a whole lot of effort into building this team, right? We're more than just five players. We're going to be a team, and we're going to take the time, and we're going to trust the process. And like, they have all these buzzwords of like sports psychology and all, which I appreciate. I really appreciate what they're trying to do here. Well, buddy, you're about to embark on the harshest journey now. Like, this is the moment where you prove to everybody that you will stick to whatever vision you have, and you're going to walk through the valley in the shadow of death that you are in now, because you haven't made any of the events. You're just basically going to go to Dallas, a pro league here and there. You're not going to make the major. Show us that you are willing to work through this very, very tough time, both as players and as a team, and keep on working with whatever it is you're doing. Because all of the talk about like, hey, we want to build like healthy relationships, and we want to put emphasis on communication and making sure that we talk about things and we get on the same wavelength. I totally support that. It's much easier to do when you win, and it gets very tricky. It gets very tricky when you lose and when you get disappointed time and time again. So now they're sort of primed to prove that whatever blueprint they believe they have in terms of how to build a team and how to withstand pressure, and by pressure I mean rough events, bad results, disappointment. This is it. If in 3 months, we're now in March, if towards the end of the Q2 of this year, if Liquid is a contender for a top team, and I will just say top 8 team in the world, I'll tip my hat to them. Because that would mean that they have kept a high work ethic, they have kept on working the baseline of the team, what they need to be working on, in spite of all of the disappointments they've just had, because a lot of easy teams take the shortcuts then. They're like, oh yeah, we believe in this team, it's going to be amazing, oh, it's going to be great. Oh, wait, we didn't qualify, bye. So this is the moment where they get to show us what they're made of, how they're going to bounce back, continue to build as a team, because obviously they're far from being ready. But again, whenever you and I, we talked about the project, we always said, very interesting team, holy hell, the potential, that's going to be great. But I said, you cannot underestimate the amount of work you need to put in when you're going to create, and the word really is create, a team out of nowhere.
Yes.
And now, obviously, I think some of these players were aware that it was going to be rough, but I don't think they had imagined how complicated it would be. And I'll go back to imagining Twist, who arguably, allegedly declined Vitality and is now not at the major. Like,
there's a world he could maybe have been in phase or Vitality right now. So it's a big gamble. Yeah.
And I take absolutely no pleasure in seeing them fail. Absolutely not. I would wish for them to be at the major. I would wish for Twist to be at the major. I think the major is better when he's in than when he's out. now you have to deal with some of the decisions that you've made and what it means on short term. And it's going to take a whole lot to stomach it and keep on working anyway and bring the same kind of energy, the same kind of vibe to the training, because then this is where vicious cycles start. You get a little bit disappointed, and so you give a little bit less to the team, and then your level is a little bit lower, which means a bit more frustration. And then suddenly some teams have gone down drain like that.
Of course.
So we're going to have to keep an eye on Liquid to see if they can keep working, keep improving in spite of what is obviously a heartbreaking result, a heartbreaking beginning of the season. And if so much work has been put into creating a healthy team, well, now you have the chance to show that to us, because you have a very tough road ahead of you.
One thing I'll say, since I literally just interviewed this exact guy, is the Mind Body Esports guy has got his work cut out for him on this one.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Like we're saying, the potential's there. And if people don't know, this guy has an amazing resume. So not only in G2 was he working with them when they won the Blast World Finals and kind of ate the Huxley lineup with JKS, but in League of Legends, if people don't know, he's basically had his hands behind something like three of the last four like NA champions in League of Legends or something like, as in he went from org to org to org, and every org he joined won the championship in LCS split. So this guy, look, the resume is looking awesome, but I tell you what, he's got a fucking hard task ahead of him now, because what's great is you've got the pieces, but right now they're not put together. No one's figured out the puzzle. I'm with you, Maniac. Yeah.